If I asked you, what's the most searched for Bible book when people are looking online and they're looking up a passage, that passage normally comes from what book would you imagine? What are the top three books that you think are the most searched for? Bible Gateway, which is a very good resource, BibleGateway.com for all things Bible, compiled the statistics and found out what books people were searching for more than any other. If you had to name the top three, what would you name? Number three is John. Number two is Matthew. Number one is one I don't think I heard anybody say, and that surprises me. Psalms. Most searches are for something in the book of Psalms. Now, when it comes to the Psalms, which Psalms would you imagine are the most searched for? When people are looking for a Psalm, which Psalm do you imagine is the most searched for? If you get this one wrong, your membership will be revoked and you will be removed from the Lamb's Book of Life if you did not say Psalm 23, right? The Lord is my shepherd, obviously. Now, the second most searched, what would you imagine is the second most searched? I will tell you this. If you get this one, and you'll be honest about it, and you tell me that you got this one, Eddie, are you looking up Psalms to... Eddie literally got out his phone. Speaking of removal, if you get this one, honestly, without cheating, I'll buy your lunch today. Now, I'm not going to eat with you. I'm tired. I want to go home. But I will buy your lunch today if you get this one. Psalm 91. Psalm 91 talks about God being our refuge and fortress. The third most looked for psalm, I thought, would be the second most. I really expected this to be number two, and that is Psalm 139. Right? Most people are familiar with at least the words or some of the words of Psalm 139. Where can I go from your presence? Where can I flee from your spirit? The first part of the psalm. The latter part of the psalm, I am fearfully and wonderfully made, and my soul knows it very well. Most people are familiar with part of that. Another scientific study found that Psalm 139 is probably the most used differently from what the original writer intended psalm. That's not really scientific, that's my opinion. But I think probably that Psalm 139, and I'm not saying that people use it wrongly, but I think that maybe Psalm 139 is the psalm that most people use other than the way the writer intentionally meant for it to be used. So guess what we're going to do today? We're going to figure out exactly what Psalm 139 is about, right? So Psalm 139, as we continue this discussion that we started in our class this morning, as we go through a quarter of study on foundations of our faith, we have come to, where did I come from? Why am I here? What is my origin as a human being? And so Psalm 139. So Psalm 139, what is it about? Psalm 139, what is it about? Maybe I'm having a hard time getting your attention this morning. So right, Psalm 139, written a long time ago. What does this have to do with me? Maybe this part will get your attention. David has problems. So maybe if you're having a hard time getting locked in, I'm talking about all this abstract stuff, talking about all this ancient writing. What does this have to do? Maybe if you're sort of having a hard time getting locked in, maybe now that you know that Psalm 139 was written by somebody that has something in common with you. Because I guarantee you, you've got problems of some sort this morning. You have something going on with you. And there's something that we're going to talk about in Psalm 139 that has something to do with you. It's going to address you as you deal with your problems. David had problems, just like you do. Some of them were external. Some of them were outside of himself. Some of them were coming from other people specifically. Some of them were coming from his culture. And these outer problems are bothering David. But some of his problems are internal. Some of his problems are within himself. And some of these things, David is the problem. And so David writes Psalm 139, and I hope you're there because we're going to spend a lot of time in Psalm 139. David has problems. And what David is going to say is, I've got problems, but that's okay because God is present. I've got problems, but I'm going to be able to deal with those problems because God is present. So what I would love for you to do right now is to do the opposite of that thing we always tell you to do. We always tell you to leave your cares and problems where? Out there, so we can come in here and worship God. I'm going to ask you not to do that. I'm going to ask you if you need to get up and physically go pick them up again. Go back outside to the porch out there and pick those problems up and bring them, because that's what David does. Psalm 139 is a very worshipful psalm. Psalm 139 is a worship psalm. Worship because of his problems. He said, I've got these problems. And what helped me to deal with those problems was some worship. I worship in view of those problems. And what he writes is just a beautiful piece of literature. More than that, it's a beautiful piece of divine aid to what we're going through. God is present. God is perfectly present. Notice how he describes the perfect presence of God in this psalm. Psalm 139 in verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. That's a general statement of God's knowledge of David. Verse 2. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Notice that David says to God, you know, whatever situation I'm in, you know it. Whatever situation I'm in, you're right there and you know what's going on. Sitting down, rising up, thinking, walking, lying down, doesn't make any difference. You know everything that I'm doing all the time. Whatever situation, God knows you're in church, right? Of course he knows you're in church. You're in his house. This is where God is, right? This is where we come to meet God, right? Of course he knows you're here, but he's going to know when you get in the car to go home. He's going to know when you're at home. And he's going to know when you're at work and when you're at the hospital and when you're at the doctor. He's going to know all that too. Equally the same. He knows every situation. He knows you inside and out. So seated or standing or walking, notice he says in verse 2, you know my thought from afar. Verse 4, before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. You thought it, you said it, you felt it, God knows it. Notice, I love verse 5. You have enclosed me behind and before and what? Laid your hand what? On me. Notice the imagery there. Behind, before, and what? Over. In other words, what? Completely enclosed. Totally surrounded by God. Notice verses 7 through 10. Doesn't matter where you are geographically. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you're there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. Does it matter where you are? North, south, east, west, ocean, beach, mountains, city, country. Does it make any difference? God knows exactly where you are, and he is with you there. 11 and 12, even under impossible conditions, God knows what's going on with you. Look at verse 11. Surely, if I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night. Now here he doesn't mean, if I can get away in a dark place, maybe I can get away with something. That's not what he means here. This psalm is not about there's an all-seeing eye watching you, so be afraid. That's not what this psalm is about. This psalm is about no matter what's happening, God is with you as His child. So when David says in verse 11, the darkness overwhelms me, he doesn't mean I'm going to try to get out of the dark corner and do something bad. He means in darkness where nobody else can see, and the light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. So what he's saying is that even under impossible conditions, even when there's no way that God should know what's going on, what does He know? He knows everything, just as if it were broad daylight. Now, let's expand on that, because David does. How does David know that? How does David know that God can see in the dark? How does David know that God has night vision? How does David know that God can work in the dark, pitch dark, the same as He can in broad daylight? How does he know that? Well, because God's done it. This is the context of 13 to 16. 13 to 16 are an explanation. Notice in verse 13, the word for. 13 to 16 are an explanation of 11 and 12. David says, God, you can work in the dark just like if it were broad daylight. Well, how do you know that? Verse 13, for you formed my inward parts. You wove me where? In my mother's womb. Now that's not as big a deal to us as it would have been to David, because what do we have the capability to do that he didn't? Now we can see into the womb, right? First we had ultrasound, and I could never tell anything on that. Doctor go, oh, look, is this and that. Look, it looked like a big blob of jelly to me. Like, no, I could never tell all that stuff. I just took their word for it. So you had the ultrasound. Now we have what? You know what we have now? 3D. 3D, you can see everything as if it were right there in front of you. They didn't have any of that stuff. To those people, the womb was entirely a blank, dark, unseeable world. But what does David say? God was there. God was not only there, He was working. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Just figurative for the womb, it doesn't mean literally. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance. In your book were all written, the days were ordained for me when as yet there was not one of them. So what David is saying is, God, you're with me, you can see, you're working in every situation. Even when it's pitch black, nobody could see anything. God can see just like it was broad daylight. There's no difference in what He's able to see and do. So that's what the psalm says. Now we want to know, what does it mean, particularly this section, because this is our section for this morning, verses 13 to 16. So I just want to talk about this for a minute. Does Psalm 139, 13 to 16, specifically apply to every baby in every womb? I'd say, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Just let's talk about it. Does Psalm 139, 13 to 16, specifically apply to every baby in every womb? Does God personally construct every baby in every womb? Or, right, that's the position of a lot of people. Yes, He does. Right? Let's talk about it just for a little bit. It's not really the point we want to make. Just want to talk about that. First of all, let me ask you this. Wherever you land on that question, what is the fundamental application of this passage to you and me? Wherever you land on this issue of does God personally construct every fetus, what is the fundamental application to you and to me? God is your creator. Fundamentally, that's what we get from this passage. God is my creator. Does that mean, and is the passage teaching, that God made in every detail, every cell, limb, everything, organ, me and you? Where do we fall on that? Did God personally? Well, there's a lot of passages that might indicate that He did. Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Did not He, Job said, who made me in the womb, make Him? He means there, the slave. And the same one fashioned us in the womb. Zechariah 12 and verse 1, the Lord forms the spirit of man within Him. Right? So these passages seem to indicate God personally involved in at least these conceptions and developments in the womb. But let me ask you this. If God personally constructs in every detail, every baby in every womb, might that lead to some challenging questions in view of the condition in which some babies are conceived and formed and born? I'm not asking if that derails. All I'm asking you is, might that lead to some challenging questions about babies who may be otherwise than quote unquote physically normal or otherwise? Right? So did God make me in the womb? Does God make every baby in the womb? Does God make a child who is not physically, quote unquote, normal in the womb? Does God make them to be that way? Look, this is more than an academic question. This is more than, does this happen to people out there? We have in our congregation babies with these issues. And probably in your family, you have babies. This is not an academic question. So, is it possible that God forms in the womb babies with such challenges, we might say? Well, sometimes He did. John 9. Remember that Jesus and His disciples encountered a man who was blind from birth. And they said, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? Right? They want to know, why was he born that way? Do you remember what Jesus said? You know what Jesus said about that? Jesus said it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. That man was formed in the womb by God as a blind baby for God's glory to be displayed in him decades later, almost 40 years later. That's a tough thing to chew. That's a tough thing to get a hold of. But that's what it says. But does that mean then that every womb passage has a direct application in every situation? Every time the Bible talks about the womb, is it telling us something universal? When it says in Genesis 29:31, the Lord opened her womb. The Lord allowed her to conceive and bear a child. Does that apply to every woman? Does God specifically choose a woman to give birth every time? You might say, well, yeah, of course He does. Was it also true then that the Lord in the Bible closes the womb? Does He close every womb? Is every woman who is unable to conceive unable to because God said she will not conceive? Are we ready to accept that? God, Galatians 1:15, Paul said, God set me apart from the womb and called me. Is that true of everybody? Is everybody set apart? Is everybody called? And then we have these other instances, Acts 3, where this man is lame. This man cannot walk. He has a condition that he got in the womb. Did God make him lame? I'm not saying he did or he didn't. I'll be honest with you, I don't really know. There are Christians who come down on both sides. And there are Christians who come down where I am and say, I don't really know. You know, sometimes it's, I love the part of my job where I can stand up here and say, I'm telling you this is how it is. And then sometimes part of my job is to say, this is the issue, you go figure it out, I don't know. And that's this one, I don't know. But what we do want to really get is what Psalm 139, 13 to 16 does have to say to us. And here's what it says. God is perfectly with me. By perfectly, I mean He's never anywhere else but with me. I love Psalm 46, which says, God is a... Remember what kind of help it says? The language kind of is kind of interesting. The way God is a what help in trouble? You remember that? God is a very present help. Isn't that funny? Very present. You're either present or you're not. Is that true? Well, not really. Ladies, your husband ever present but not present? Is your husband ever there but not there? Right? Some of these guys, I always wonder where they are. Are they there? But you know how that is. He's here. He's sitting on the couch. And I've had a 30-minute conversation, and he didn't get a word of it. You can be present. God is a very present help. He is perfectly present in all times and all places with no limitations or obstacles. This is the lesson that we are to take from Psalm 139, 13 to 16. Notice the lesson we're not supposed to take. We're not supposed to take the lesson that God sees everything I do, so I'm afraid. God sees everything I do, so I dread seeing Him in judgment. God sees everything I do, so I am ashamed. Now, is there ever a time for that? Yes, there is. We're not going to read it, but in 2 Corinthians 7, 8 through 11, Paul said, I caused you sorrow by my letter, and I'm glad that I did. Paul said, I made you weep when I wrote you a letter, and I'm happy about it because you needed to fix some things. But thinking about what Psalm 139 says should not automatically make the believer feel like I should be afraid and ashamed. If you have kids, is that what you want in your children's relationship with you? Do you want your kids to dread your presence? I mean, this is the way we think about God sometimes. Do you want your children to dread your presence? Oh, 5 minutes, Dad will be home. Boy, I'm dreading that. 5 minutes, Mom will be home. Sure, boy, we're going to get it then. I mean, is that appropriate sometimes? Yeah, that's not what you want. You don't want them to dread. You don't want them to fear your presence. They know what's been going on with you. And you, your parents, you know, you know what's going on with your kids. And do you want them to hate that? Do you want your kids to hate the fact that you know what's going on with them? No, nobody wants that. But that's how we are with God sometimes. This is not the point of Psalm 139. A few things quickly that are the point, I think, of Psalm 139, because it's what David says. I should appreciate and be aware, be in awe, rather, of God. I should appreciate and be in awe of God. I want you to think about that for a minute. To be in awe of God. How common is awe in our world today? How common is it to be in awe of something? How many times during a day do you stand in awe of something? I mean, it's kind of rare these days, isn't it? Why is it so rare? For one thing, you got too much going on. That's one thing. When you got your head down and you're barreling through the day because you got 50 things to get done, there is no point in your day that you're going to stop and pause and go, I'm just going to stand in all that. You've got too much going on, for one thing. The other thing is that in our world, there's a scientific explanation for everything. Everything's been explained away. Everything's got an answer. Just Google it. Just Google it. Wonder how that works? Google. Don't get that. Google. How's that happen? Google, Google, Google. Right? Just Google it. And so then you got the answer. Well, there it is. And we don't have awe for anything. So David says, let me stop for a minute and meditate in awe on God. Look again at what he says in verses 2 through 4. When I sit down, when I rise up, when I think it, when I'm walking, when I'm lying down, even before there is a word on my tongue. My family got something a few weeks ago, I guess. I don't know why we waited so long and how we ever lived without it. Life 360. I don't know how we lived without that. Talk about fun. Life 360. That means an app you get on your phone and you put your family in it and you can always see where everybody is all the time. Man, you talk about fun. This is awesome. I love this. I'm having a blast with this. Right? You can see on there where they are, what the address is, how fast they're going. It's not always accurate. The other day it had it had Isaiah riding a bike. Isaiah don't ride no bike. He was driving a forklift. And it thought he was riding a bike, you know, forklift on Life 360. But you can, it'll show you they're walking somewhere. Walking. It'll have little feet, a little picture of them walking. I'm loving this thing. You can see where everybody is all the time and see what they're doing. But fortunately, one thing you can't do is pull that thing up and go, there's Rhiannon. I see she's at College Hill Suites. She's studying. She's talking. She's thinking, what? Can't see that on there. You can't see the thoughts. You can't see the words. I hope they're working on that. We're going to download that as soon as they come out with it. You can't see all of those things. But God is like Life 360 times a billion. Because he can see all of that stuff all the time. And not only can he see it, what did he know? He knew it was going to happen before it ever did. Isn't that crazy? David is standing in awe of God. Look at verses 7 through 10. Verses 7 through 10. David says, where can I? David is not saying, I wish I could get away from God. Okay? Erase that. That's what everybody thinks of it. Where can I go to your presence? He doesn't want to get away. But he says, no matter where I go, God, there you are. So notice what he says. If I ascend to heaven, in other words, if I go what? If I go up as far as I can go, or what? Sheol, what's that? If I go down as far as I can go. Doesn't matter. God is still there. Look at what else he says, verse 9. If I take what? The wings of what? The dawn, or dwell where? In the remotest part of the sea. So imagine David is in Jerusalem. So David's in Jerusalem. And I'm going to get my directions wrong here. Try to ignore that. David's in Jerusalem. And he looks to the east. What does he see in the east? What happens in the east? Right? Sun comes up. Right? There's the dawn. David says, if I could leave Jerusalem and I could go as far that way as possible and get to where the dawn is happening, who would still be there? God still be there, right? Or if David looks west from Jerusalem, if he looks west, what's out there? Think about it. Think of a map. What's out there? If you go west, there's a sea out there. And David says, if I go that way and I go as far as I can to the very end of that sea, who's still there? You see what David is doing? David is saying he's giving us the extremes as he knew them. Are these still the extremes as we know them? All right, think about the solar system. Think about the solar system. Think about that. If you went out from the earth and you passed the moon and you passed whatever, I don't know, I forget the acronym to remember all that stuff. But if you pass all that stuff and finally you get to the last planet in the solar system, which is Neptune. Didn't it used to be Pluto, right? They downgraded. Isn't that sad to get it to planet? Demotion is terrible. But it's Neptune. If you could go to Neptune, would God still be there? God still be there, right? Do you know the farthest thing from Earth that we have been able to lay eyes on? The farthest thing from Earth we've been able to lay eyes on is a galaxy called, and I love this creative name that they gave it, HD1. Isn't that clever? So it's a galaxy called HD1. Here's how far it is from us. Here's how far it is. 13.1 billion light years. So, as I understand it, and I'm sure some smart person is going to correct me on this, I think this is right. A light year is if you traveled at the speed of light for a year. I think it's right. If you traveled at the speed of light for a year, 13.1 billion times, you would get to HD1. So if you could do that, jump in your spaceship and drive out there to HD1, would God still be there? Yes, He would still be there. It doesn't matter how far you go. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference because God is still there. God, He says, even in utter darkness, I don't know if the Bible teaches us that God literally knits every human being. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. What I do know is that the Bible says that God created the conception, development, and birth process. Is there anything more amazing than the conception and development and birth process? Every time I think about it, I think, how does it ever go right? How, to me, it's just as amazing that conception works the way it does and development. It's even more amazing than it being a miracle every time. That it works at all. Fertilization, split cell, split, 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 little blob, little baby looking blob, little baby, finger, all that stuff. Isn't that incredible that it works that way? God did that, and David is in awe of it. David also tells us in Psalm 139 that God is with us and God is a perfect help in our external problems. So this is in verses 19 and following. And David says, here's the application to you. David says, I wish every wicked person would depart from me. Is there anything in your life that you wish would depart from you? Do you have anything in your life that you wish would depart from you? That you wish would get out of your life? Do you have any person that you wish would get out of your life? If you do, I will be standing at the back door when you leave. I want to know who it is. I'll keep it between us. I'm bound. Bound to confidentiality. Do you have anything you wish would depart from you? Is there anything in your life that is an enemy to you? Is there anything in your life that you hate and would do anything to get rid of? This is what David says. And he says that God will help him in all of his difficulties. And then finally, he says we can trust God's presence and help with all of our internal problems. I want you to notice this before we start to wrap up and be done. I want you to notice this. Psalm 139 and verse 23. I want to ask you if you're ready right now to pray this prayer in all honesty. Psalm 139, 23. 139, 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my anxious thoughts. Are you cool with that? I mean, he does anyway, right? We got that. But are you cool with that? Are you cool with saying to God, here it is, open book, Take a look around. Whatever you come up with, you're welcome to all of it. I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine that this morning we were going to start a new series called, well, each one would have a different name. It would be your name. Ty Smith. Right? So Ty, just put your name in there. Put your little profile picture up there. And we're going to start a new series. In this series, we're going to talk about everybody who's a member here. So put your name in there, put your picture up there, and then we're going to list every single one of your thoughts for all of us to read. Every one of your thoughts, all of your desires. If you want it, we're going to see it. If you desire it, we're going to know it. Every sin, word, thought, action, everything that you say, even what you didn't say. See, you think you get credit, don't you? Oh, I wanted to say that, but I didn't. Well, we're going to know those too. Every imagination, whatever you thought about doing, wanted to do, thought in detail about doing, we're going to put all of it up there. And we're going to make a slideshow out of it. We're going to have pictures. We're going to have videos. We're going to have the whole thing right up there. And everybody's going to know it. How you feel about it? I'm sweating right now. How do you feel about that? You say, oh my goodness, I don't want that. I would never want that. But that's exactly what God knows. That's exactly what God knows. Every single thing. That's what David is saying. So what do we do with that? Well, before we do that, next week, Lord willing, 1 Corinthians 10:31. Who am I? And what am I supposed to be doing as we continue this series on foundations of our faith? But here's what we need to remember from Psalm 139. God is perfectly present with you all the time. There's no limitation to that. There's no obstacle to that. There's no, you know, wavering of it. Well, He's kind of here today, a little bit here tomorrow, really there the next day. He's with you the same all the time. And if you're a believer, that's a good thing. If you're a believer, that's a blessing. Now, if you are not a believer, then there's some changes we need to make. If you're not a believer, there's something that we need to do about that. You need to come to God through His Son to get forgiveness of sin, to be reconciled to the Father, so that when He's with you, this can be a comfort to you rather than a source of fear for you. If you're not a Christian, that needs to get fixed. If you are a Christian and there's some things that this sort of gets you a little upset inside, oh, God knows that. God's aware of this. God saw that. Well, then work on that. And if we can help you, we'd love to do that. Whatever your need this morning, it's the perfect promise of God for you to make things right with Him or get His help today because He's perfectly here all the time. So this is an opportunity for you to do that. I don't mean here in the building. I mean here where you are all the time. So if we can help with that, we'd love to. We're going to sing this song. As we do that, if you decide that there's some way that we can help you, we want to do that. We'd love to talk privately. After church, you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.